Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagen. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Happy hump day, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, True Straight Up, the Chuck and Julie Show, brought to you by
AmericaCitizenPress.com, great conservative website, along with Denver Synergenics and Dr. Julie McCallan.
Keeps me going.
Keeps you going. Hey, so we've got...
I can keep you going.
And keep you going, too. Denver Synergenics, Dr. Julie McCallan. In a couple of seconds here, we're going to bring on Andrea Hall and Joe Altman to talk about all kinds of things, actually. And then at the bottom of the hour, we have him on a week and a half ago, Bruce Baker from the city of Westminster here in Colorado.
Good news for those residents of Westminster who want a brand new, citizen-oriented city council.
Well, and it's citizens fighting City Hall and winning, and outrageous water bills, exactly. But while we wait for Joe, and we can bring him on when we get him, but let's go ahead and we can bring up Andrea. Hey, Andrea, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Julie. I so appreciate it.
So I think today it is particularly good to be talking to you guys. Today, Facebook banned Trump. Mm-hmm. Twitter announced that, they're continuing their permanent ban against Donald Trump. And I've been sort of teasing you guys saying, if anybody has any idea of what it's like to be, canceled, silenced, to have the elite oligarchy go after you, it's you and your client, Joe Altman.
Why don't you, since we got a second with that, Joe, tell us about yourself. Where'd you go to law school? Where do you practice? All that.
Sure. So I graduated from the University of North Dakota. I'm originally from North Dakota. And when I graduated, I moved out here and opened my own law practice out of law school. And so it's been a whirlwind, I guess, for the last 17 years. So, yeah.
And so what happened is, and that's what set the stage for folks, and we had him on our show, actually, several months ago, talking about raising questions about the 2020 election, which is absolutely verboten. We just cannot do that anymore. And I see Joe is here. And, sure. And as a result, rather than saying, well, let's look into this, let's investigate it, maybe he has a point here, they immediately slapped him, the powerful people, right? Dominion, all kinds of, power. Eric Coomer came down on him, slapping him with lawsuits. Right? And why don't you talk a little bit about the status of that?
So we just had a status conference yesterday. We are still in the phase of some preliminary motions being filed, a 12B motion. There's a lot of people that have that motion pending before the court, whether or not they actually have personal jurisdiction over, Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and a number of other people. All of the defendants, as of April 30th, filed anti-slap motions. And so, of course, they are now having to respond to that. We just lost the judge that was on our case. He got moved to another courtroom. So we're kind of in this limbo phase. The new judge does not take over our case until towards the end of May. And so we have a senior retired judge that's currently handling some preliminary matters. So at the status conference, we were, still going back and forth what needed to go first. Was it the 12B motions to decide if we have personal jurisdiction? Because why are we going to argue the anti-slap if you don't have personal jurisdiction? And there are time frames to respond. And they were a little overwhelmed, apparently, with the 7,000 pages of documents that were filed. And so they were... in my opinion, being a little whiny about the time frame to respond. Yes.
Well, who's representing Dominion?
So Dominion's actually not the one that's brought the lawsuit. We believe that they are probably behind, the funding of the suit. However, it's Eric directly that has brought the suit against Joe and everyone else. And his attorneys are out of Texas, basically. I believe Charlie is also licensed in Colorado. However, his main practice is in Texas with the other two plaintiffs' counsel. So yesterday was just kind of a resetting and seeing what's going to happen. We go back to court on May 24th.
Okay, nice. We've got Joe now. So, Joe, hey, thank you for your time. Appreciate you coming to the show. But I wanted to ask you, so they haven't been, it's not enough just to try to destroy you with lawsuits and destroy your reputation and trash you and threaten you. You can you talk about, you had an incident actually directed to you personally at your house over the weekend. Is that right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I had just gotten back from a nonprofit event. It was actually a 4-H event, and we got back and my neighbor had pulled and gotten all of my mail for me. We have property, all the people in our neighborhood have property, so the mailboxes are all in one place. They kept getting broken into, so the post office, until they could get it fixed, made everybody pick their mail up at the post office. So as neighbors, we all get together and we'll pick up our mail for each other and help each other. So I got home, I had this basket full of mail, and got all the way to the bottom of the mail. And there was a letter, there was actually a letter in it, and the letter said Altman and then capital R, it spelled my name wrong, spelled my last name wrong, and then R-E-S-D, so I guess residence. And it came from a window company that we had just used. We had just renovated our house, and so I opened it. And when I opened it, there was two Post-its that were sealed together, and then there was tape all the way around the Post-it. And inside the Post-it, I hung it up, I put it up to the light. You could actually see through that there was powder inside of it.
Wow.
So at that point, I took the Post-it, I put it back in the envelope, thought about it for a second, put it down, walked over, washed my hands. First thing I kept thinking was fentanyl, right? So, now this follows, by the way, the threats that came on Friday. So on Friday, I got people that basically sent me instant messages. I'll use one as an example. I had people make phone calls to me. Saying that, hey, I wish someone would bash your head in and and terrorize your family, right? And so I responded to that person by saying, hey, you just let me know when. You can come on over anytime, right? So that was Friday. Saturday, I had this envelope. So I called the sheriff's office, the non-emergency number, and said, look, I don't know what to do with this, but I don't know what's in this envelope. I've touched it. I did do a little bit of research on ricin and things like that, just if I was exposed. And then a deputy showed up. I put it in a baggie, a Ziploc baggie, and then took it outside. And then when the deputy got there, I went ahead and double bagged it. So I got another baggie and put it in another baggie and then placed it in the gazebo. So at that point, she goes, well, you know, we can take it, but, you know, there's no guarantee they're going to test it. And I sat there for a minute and I was like, well, that doesn't sound right. And,
right.
I'm texting the sheriff and, you know, he didn't actually get it till morning, but she then checked with her supervisor, who then checked with the commander. I think it's commander. And, the commander said, yeah, we need to send out hazmat.
Okay.
So they immediately sent out hazmat, made my wife and my daughter, vacate the premises, and we had to go up and sit in the car. We started off not in the car, but just standing out there in our cul-de-sac, while hazmat showed up, you know, the emergency responders showed up, and, you know, basically had to go put on the big
right
ET suits and go down and test it for bioweapons, basically.
No. Well, so a little different response from the second person.
Yeah,
the sheriff's yeah. department.
But we're not going to test this. We're just going to open it and take it back to the police department.
Well,
what?
So
I had to tell them, I go, look, at first the deputy was like, okay, well, nobody's going to send you anything. And I go, well, actually they would. And I've had to have personal security detail on me for the last 5 months. I have had threats to my life, and I'm the guy that broke the Eric Toomer thing in Dominion before he was even talking about Dominion. So there's a high probability that people want to terrorize me, terrorize my family, and do harm to me. So as soon as I said that, I mean, the deputy did a great job. She was amazing.
Okay.
At that point, she recognized that there was a higher risk level that could be associated with me, actually, than there would be someone on the street that maybe someone would would send something to.
Well, now, just to kind of wrap this part, but did they test it? Did they find anything? Was it okay or not dangerous at least?
So the FBI, the sheriffs, the hazmat, and the first responders were all on scene. Although the FBI never came to talk to me, the one guy from hazmat pointed to another guy that was heavy set that was on the other side and talked about the FBI being here. They did call me the next day. The detective called me the next day and said, "Hey, listen, the FBI, everything's been handed off to the FBI." I said, "I haven't heard from anyone. No one's called me. Still to this day, nobody's called me other than the detective," and said, "It looks like that they've eliminated all the major risks."
Okay.
But it looks like it's graphite, which obviously graphite is not going to kill you. But that's not the point. They did it to terrorize my family. They did it to terrorize my son, my wife, to terrorize my daughter. And although I don't feel fear, one of the things that pissed me off is the fact that they would do something to instill fear in my daughter and in my wife. Right?
And so we don't for sure know who did. I'm assuming you don't think it was the window people who did it, right? But that's I'm assuming, right? But that's got to be somewhat scary that they knew enough about you. I mean, did somebody went to the trouble to, number one, obviously must have been doing some sort of surveillance on you or something, that they knew the window company had been there. They had to have gone to some trouble, I would think, to get the window company envelope, right? So this is not just some, do they have anything? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, so I think it was just a coincidence on the window company part, right? I don't think it had anything to do with it. It was, and I don't want to say their name because I don't want to say anything from them. I don't think it did. But more importantly, it was the window company showed from Broomfield. The post stamp came from Denver. My name was spelled wrong. There was enough things that were on it that if I'd have been thinking clearly on this, I probably wouldn't have opened it to begin with. I'm just grateful that I'm the one that opened it. If my wife would have opened it, she would have freaked out.
Right.
Unfortunately, with today's FBI, I mean, never hear back. Kind of like Biden laptop.
They're gonna do a whole search of your house now and see if you've been talking to Rudy Giuliani anymore. Let me just add
to that because I speak to the detective yesterday. So by Friday, we should know what the substance actually was. And he informed me that probably by Monday we would know if they were going to do further DNA testing, because obviously potentially the envelope was licked. So there's DNA from that, as well as touching the envelope, which has the touch DNA.
And the tape around the edges for the...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So there is a potential that there is DNA that can be found from that. Now, whether the FBI does that or the Douglas County Sheriff's Department does that, it's still open. However, it has been made very clear that this isn't just a normal person that's walking down the street, and so we're going to blow it off. I made that very clear to the detective yesterday. So I hope that even if the product that was in the envelope shows up to be, baby aspirin or baby powder or flour, whatever it is, that ultimately they still move forward and continue the investigation. But we'll know more.
Here's what would really, though, guys, be particularly concerning to me is, like, because Chuck and I went through something kind of similar and had death threats and stuff like that when Chuck made a comment on KNUS and that we lost our show on 710 KNUS. So I know what it's like, and it's kind of freaky. You're like, they're probably not going to come kill me, on the other hand. But
we had lots of death threats.
We did. But your case is a little different in that, I mean, this was a massive thing for like a week, right? And then everybody went, the trolls all went on their own way. But in your case, I mean, it hasn't been getting a ton of publicity. I mean, to me, it would be really, how do I say it? It's not like your average person out there is like, oh, I hate Joe Altman for bringing up this kind of complicated claim against a complicated situation, blah, blah, blah. Right? This, I would be concerned, I don't know, that this would be somebody who cares deeply, not just in a general way, about the case. I mean, I don't know. Am I conspiracy theorying that here, or what do you guys think? I'd be concerned about the suspect in this case, I would say.
Yeah, more so than any other situation, for the simple fact that, like Joe explained, the envelope is from somebody that was doing a window remodel at his house. So it's potentially somebody that knows him, knows what was going on. Like I said, this isn't just like somebody that threatened him on Facebook, right? That lives across the country and probably is never going to get on a plane and, you know, has big words sitting behind a computer screen, right? Like, this is clearly somebody that is local in Colorado and is privy to him, his whereabouts, and knowledge of him personally.
Well, I mean, they're gonna know my address because Eric Coomer's lawyer actually doxed me in the complaint, right? Put my address, put my company name in there, did things to make sure that I was going to get those loons out to my house and trying to do things to me specifically. I want to say that the company that was on the envelope was the type of envelopes, was the company that it was the type of windows that I put in my house, but I didn't deal directly with them. I dealt with a contractor that used them. Okay. So that's why I thought it was just a little bit different. And that's why I opened it.
Let me ask, let's talk a little bit more about the lawsuit. If we could, how many plaintiffs and how many defendants are there?
There's only one plaintiff, and as of Newsmax settling, there's nine, right, Joe?
Yeah, there's 10 left. There's 11 total if you count the FEC United and Conservative Daily.
Here's what I think, and tell me what you think about this. One of the things that they did is they slapped this on you fast and furious when you first started talking about this. And as a result, I mean, Dominion, although they're not the ones here, I mean, they're just bullies, right? They're suing everybody and everything. I'm glad to see Mike Lindell suing them back. And I know we've talked to people in the media who don't want to touch this story because they don't want to get sued. Not that they don't think there's some truth to it, not that they don't think it's worth looking into, but because of the threat of the lawsuit. I mean, to me, that is such an attack on our First Amendment rights. I mean, it's one thing to send you threatening letters. You know, they dox you, they do all of this. But the very fact that they're using, to me, it's a terrorist attack on anybody who would be willing to even talk about it, because they make it clear we will go after you with everything we have.
Yeah. So I don't know if I can, obviously I'm a little bit more vocal. I'm the wrong guy for them to pick a fight with, because frankly, I just don't have any fear. I fear God, right? I see, put me on this path. I am unapologetically going to stay on this path. And I did not speak up because I saw it as Eric Coomer said, that I was seeking clicks or advertising. If we're being completely blunt about this, I didn't even start getting advertisers on Conservative Daily until last month.
We feel that.
I did it for the right reasons. There was not, and I'm an introvert, not an extrovert. So I don't really enjoy that notoriety. I don't look for it. I've never looked for it. I've always given to inner city youth and to education and all these different projects and given. I'm a reverse tither. So everything that he says, the reasoning why I did it, is completely the opposite of who I am as a person. But once you get me in the fight, I will not stop. But that's not what's happening with the media. The media is being weaponized against me. Newsmax comes out and says, we could not find any evidence. Well, the Newsmax didn't reach out to my attorney. Newsmax didn't reach out to me. Newsmax didn't ask me for corroborating evidence. Newsmax settled with Eric Coomer, either one of two reasons, in my opinion. One, they're compromised, right? And they actually stand with this radical ideology on the left. Or number two, frankly, they just wanted to get out and saw it as an opportunity that if we give an apology, we can walk away from this deal. Either one of those is shameful for the rest of the American people. And I don't know how to reconcile that. I've actually asked my attorney, can we sue Newsmax for defamation? They made a statement that makes me look like I lied. They never came and talked to me. I was the one on that call. I never lied. I didn't lie about anything. And all the corroborating evidence for Eric Coomer, all the corroborating evidence of what Eric Coomer did did after that as far as lying, the fact that he was involved in skinhead movements and things like that, that goes to who he is as a person, not this, I wear a halo over my head, I'm a doctor, you know, I've never done anything wrong, oh, poor me. That's not the real Eric Coomer. The real Eric Coomer is a vile human being who has said vile things and been un-American and posted the Antifa manifesto and has, frankly, a narcissistic personality that...
Well, let me ask you this question, and I want to leave enough time so if your lawyer objects, we'll scuttle it.
Yeah.
Do you have a copy of the recording that the person you identified as Eric was purported to be on?
But I've never said that I had a recording. I've never said I had a recording. I've never come out and said there's a recording. I have copious notes. I have a good timeline dating back to middle to end of September, all the way through October. I was literally, they wrote an article about me in the middle of October where I said that I've uncovered Antifa journalists. That's why I was on that call back in September, is that's what I was looking for. I've got a couple of, I call them whistleblowers, people that are friends with Eric Coomer that have come forward. They're deathly afraid of me revealing their name. The guy that was the part of Antifa that let me onto that call, deathly afraid of... me, you know, saying his name. And I never will. You will never hear me utter their name. My attorney knows little bits and pieces about those people, but I'm even very careful about what I tell her because I don't want to expose them. They have kids, you know, they're family people. I mean, I just don't want to put them in that position. But the reality is there's so much evidence. And now the evidence that came out yesterday is even more damning. It actually proves that Dominion voting systems, it is not only could be manipulated, but most probably was. How do you explain that? How do you explain breaking the code in Antrim County, what Matt DiPerno and his experts have been able to do, which prove what they did? That's why they don't want us doing anything in Maricopa County or anywhere else right around the nation.
Right. And let me bring Andrea in, and because I absolutely agree with you on that. And Andrea, I mean, what do you think about, I mean, you know, this case that you've been a lawyer for a while.
17 years.
But I mean, have you ever handled a case like this? And I guess what specifically wanted to ask you about was, you know, in terms of the way the media has portrayed it, because I know I read the Newsmax thing and they said there's been no evidence. I'm like, how? It's just a lie. It's just a lie. And they all reported. And Andrea, how do you fight back against it? I mean, or what are just, you know, I think when you and I first talked, you said our First Amendment rights, the Constitution is being destroyed bit by bit every day.
Yeah, and it's true. Like, we're mourning the erosion of the Constitution. And if people like Joe, people like you guys don't continue to fight and get shut down as a result of the big news organizations, Twitter, Facebook, yada, 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 right? If you guys continue to stop, it's going to all be taken away. I mean, we're on the brink of it right now. And with this lawsuit, I mean, this is a defining moment in our country. And what Dominion has done, the fact that now Mike Lindell is fighting back and filed his own lawsuit, like, this is a pivotal moment. If this goes the wrong way, it will forever be changed. Our country will never be the same. And so, you know, it's very sad that I've seen this go on. And like Joe said, we were absolutely mortified when we saw the statement given by Newsmax. Because mind you, all of us defense attorneys were up until almost midnight filing all of our documents that needed to be filed, right? Like, we had 700 pages that were attached to our 20-some page motion, right? So that took hours to get all of that uploaded. And like I said, you know, we ultimately found out it was a total of almost 7,000 pages wow. that the plaintiff now has to deal with regard to this, you know, anti-SLAPP and our First Amendment rights and things of that nature. So it is tough. And I'm just grateful that there's people like you that are still willing to stick it out, because there's not. People, like you said, are definitely afraid of being sued. And Dominion has made it very clear that they will sue anybody. They sent out numerous letters. In fact, that was part of our 700 pages of documents that we uploaded. They just randomly sent out letters after letters to people saying, if you don't shut your mouth, we're going to sue you. And they went on news media organizations and said that very thing, that, you know, we will sue you. We will stop at nothing. And right. For them to continue to profess that there's nothing there, I mean, we uploaded, like I said, 700 pages of documents that clearly showed things are going on in Georgia, things are going on in Arizona, things are going on in Michigan. And for them and Newsmax now to jump off the cliff and go, there's nothing there, is in my eyes.
Where is the case being brought?
Our case?
Huh?
Yeah, it's currently in Denver, but we're fighting venue.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, good luck. Yeah. Good luck. Good luck. Yeah.
They shopped venue. There is no connecting tissue between any of the defendants and Denver.
Right.
They
said,
but they knew that if they would have gone to the jurisdiction that had jurisdiction, which would have been Douglas County, they wouldn't have been able to get activist judges. Look, we would be foolish to say that our judiciary is not compromised.
Yes.
Now, whether or not this new judge is compromised, but I'll just say that we had a motion for a change of venue, and the judge ignored law and just said, "Oh, but you know, it could be
not going to do that." Yeah, not going to do that.
Unbelievable.
Well, let me ask you, Joe. I mean, you've been an entrepreneur. You've got your own podcast. You've been involved in stuff like this for a while. Are you surprised at the viciousness and the lengths? I mean, I just every day I'm a little bit, not surprised anymore, but the lengths that they are willing to go to destroy anyone, up to banning the president from stupid Facebook forever. I mean, I agree with you, Andrea. We're on the brink.
Well, look, I'm gonna say this as clearly as I possibly can say. We allowed it to happen. We allowed the weakness of the left to gain strength by standing together and bullying people. We allowed them to create environments where people are afraid to lose their jobs and they dox people and do the things that they do. We allowed them to terrorize our society by not standing up. I can tell you right now, they can't terrorize me. Right? So am I surprised? No, I'm not surprised. But what they're surprised about is that I keep fighting back. Yeah. What they're surprised about is that they cannot rattle me. They cannot rattle me. They cannot push me into a corner. I'm not that guy. I am ultimately the wrong guy. I know that in their heart of hearts, they're going, what Pandora's box did we just open?
Yeah, right.
And I told my attorneys, I said, listen, I want to sue. I want to sue Newsmax for defamation. I want to sue Eric Coomer because he's a fraud. I'm not afraid to say it. What is happening in Antrim County, if he is the director of security and strategy for Dominion Voting Systems, then he knew the vulnerabilities exist and he knew the system could be defrauded. And he was on that call and he said, I made sure of it. I made sure of it. That's what he said. Now he's saying I wasn't on that call. And I'm going, okay, you're not on that call. You just happened to put up the Antifa manifesto. You just happened to talk with hyperbole all over your Facebook page and talk about how much you hate Trump, hate the United States, hashtag no recounts, and that date back years. You just happened to go into areas where there's the swing states. Oh, you happen to be the spokesperson for Dominion all over the country and sell it and work over in foreign areas and selling the Dominion voting system to different countries. All of that is just a coincidence. Nothing to see here.
What
I assume, and this I guess is a question for your lawyer, you can get phone records that show that
yeah, what kind of discovery is out there?
Well,
yeah,
there's a lot that Joe was on the phone call.
Well,
we have not started the discovery process. We're still quite a ways out from that.
So they're shredding it. They're shredding it as we speak. Well,
his lawyers admitted that he deleted his Facebook posts.
Right.
He deleted them.
Right.
And then he said because he was afraid. Or I think that's what it was. I mean, I don't know, Andrea, if that's exactly what he said, but he basically said, yeah, we have deleted these posts, but he could have deactivated it, which is what he said he did for the 2 years that he was not posting.
Right.
His lawyer sent out a letter alluding that defendants were destroying evidence by deleting things.
Yeah.
And I politely responded and said, You might want to check with your client who scoured the internet and erased everything that he could that was attached to his name. And they came back with a snarky response about, you know, his life was in danger. And I was like, it's still destruction of evidence. And he cut it.
Yeah. All right.
Well, this is going to be an ongoing lawsuit. And we'll need you to get you all back as it winds its way through our halls of justice.
But
I want to thank you very much for coming on. And
I just want to be clear, the only justice there is just us.
There you go. I like it. And you know, and Joe, let me give you your, where can people hear you and find you if they want to? Because we've had a bunch of people saying, we love Joe. Where can people who haven't heard you yet hear you?
Well, they can go to Conservative Daily Podcast. You know, we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're on Facebook, DLive, which is where we really hang out. On our website, conservative-daily.com. We go live every day, so we actually have a live platform on our website as well. And then you can follow me at Joe Altman on Parler. I don't take new, I definitely don't take new friends on Facebook. I'm trying to get away from Facebook. Yeah. And boycott and boycott. We buy from those that actually support the American way of life, and we boycott everyone else. You can also find us on YouTube for a limited time. We're on Rumble, Gab, all the way around there. But, you know, I go live every day, Monday through Friday. I have a righteous anger at times, and I do stand up. I'm not.
What time of day?
What time are you on?
From 12 to 2 Mountain Standard Time, which is 2 to 4, obviously, on the Eastern Standard Time.
Right. All right.
Gotcha. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate talking to you.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you too. All right, we'll be in touch soon, guys.
Bye.
She's right. I like that. We're gonna steal that from you, Andrea. Justice is just us. Hey, let me switch gears for a little bit. Is Bruce Baker out there? Bruce, are you out there yet?
There he is. No.
Okay, because we're going to bring Bruce Baker on to talk about the city of
victory.
The victory for
the good guys.
That's right. And guys, so everyone listening, we will be following with Andrea and Joe, following that story too. And it's not getting enough play as it should in other places. But so we had you on last time, Bruce. We talked, fill people in on the outrageous water bills, like among the highest in the country, literally going from like $60 to like $600 in the city of Westminster for no reason other than the city, the emerge candidates are trying to social engineer us. Citizens got mad, filed a recall. The city clerk said, oh, heck with your stupid recall petitions. I'm going to throw them out. The court said, you have to have them back. But now which was good. But now there's been another victory. Talk about what's happened to the mayor or the former mayor of Westminster.
Just tell us about the whole thing.
Excellent. Well, it is a victory. It is a very good day. The court really directed the city clerk to count all the petition sections and all the signatures. And when the clerk did do that, and she issued her report, of course, to the court, but also to everyone in general, she found that we had been able to gather enough signatures to recall both the mayor and really of the council member, John Voles. So that was like 100% better than I thought. I thought, well, I knew we had the mayor, and John Voles was just 100% better. So the time frames have passed now, and in the case of John Voles, he did not resign. So at the next council meeting, they're going to have to order a recall election and time for candidate and time for all of the replacement candidates to put in their really candidacy packages. And then we should have an election. And the only dates that I know are valid are like the 15th of June and the 22nd of June.
What? Well, that'll be a quick election, which is great.
Right. A quick turnaround. And they might try to pull something to slow that down too. But
right. What about the mayor then? Point. What happened with the mayor?
The mayor. Well, the mayor on the Monday meeting, you know, the 3rd of May, resigned.
Which is what you had predicted he'd do.
You said that's what's going to happen.
That's going to happen if they certify the results and there are enough signatures. That was your prediction. And
that was indeed my of the prediction on that. It altered when we got John Voles, too. I thought maybe they'd both go for the recall election, but, well, the mayor resigned. And from what the city is doing now, I think it's a far more complicated play.
Okay.
Because what the city has done is they want to use part of our really municipal code, 1-10-1 Part D, which basically shows a hierarchy of really, I mean, the succession to become the new mayor. And it says that in the case of the mayor resigns, well, the mayor pro tem takes over. Except the last sentence of that says, and I got it right here, it says, this section shall not apply to a vacancy that is the result of a recall petition or recall election, in which case the city charter procedures applicable to recall shall apply.
Oh, that's why he put in that weaselly comment about my doctor told me to resign.
Right. He wants to try to assume the mantle that this was not as a result of the recall petition. However, he resigned on the 3rd, and the recall petition was basically certified and given to council on the 28th of April. So he'd have to make a long stretch in court.
Yes.
To say that this wasn't a result of the recall.
It was just coincidence. Well, let's explain to people why this is important, because the city of Westminster has done this before. What they do is they bring in, they being the Democrats, these emerge candidates, right? They're women candidates funded by George Soros's organizations. They support each other. They help get each other elected. And then what they do is they bump themselves up into other offices. And rather than have actual elections to replace them, they just appoint somebody else to replace them. I mean, they play this little slippery shell game with their elected positions and their friends all the time. I mean, that's what they did the last time. That's how they slid two new emerge candidates into the city of Westminster. Didn't give anybody
three.
A chance. Three. And that's what this Anita Sykes, who says, well, I should become the mayor now. That's what she's trying to do. She's just trying to slide herself into the mayor's spot.
So as I understand it, what would happen if you'd have a city council meeting in which you decide whether his resignation was due to the recall or not, and whether Ms. Sykes automatically becomes the mayor, which you would think Ms. Sykes could not vote on because it's about her. And therefore,
oh, Chuck, that's pesky rules.
It'd be a 3-2 vote against it, and therefore the other provisions would apply. Isn't that at least? There's always...
That's a theory.
Well, I think it's a pretty good theory, but...
And it would also be fairness in terms of everything else like that. But see, you have to remember that, well, the city manager and the city attorney's jobs hinge on who controls the majority of city council. And both those gentlemen desperately want to keep their job. So they're going to try to shape everyone's opinion. As a matter of fact, on the website, the city website right now, is this really narrative saying how Sykes, the mayor pro tem, is going to be elevated to mayor? And they put that on immediately after Atchison resigned.
See, and here's the thing, once again, to remind folks why this makes me so angry, is that they're supposed to represent the citizens. The citizens of Westminster have made it abundantly clear for years now that they do not want these outrageous, unnecessary water bills. And you have elected city officials who say, screw you, citizens. We're trying to turn this into a high density development for affordable housing. And pretty soon we're going to bring up homeless camps, too, by the way. I mean, they're trying to destroy the suburbs because they don't like suburbs.
So
And so rather than actually say, oh, God, I guess the citizens have spoken pretty clearly. They don't like these water rates. Maybe we should do our job and reduce them. They're fighting tooth and nail against the citizens. I mean, it's like.
Absolutely correct, Julie. And you really touched it right on. The people in charge of the city right now, the staff and OK, well, there used to be 4, but now 3 people on council hate suburbs. They don't like cars. They don't like green lawns. They don't like barbecues. They don't like block parties. They want us to all live in high density, pedestrian friendly, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So you're what they want. Going down this path. So assume the city attorney opines that I think Anita has the position. The other councilmen object and saying we can vote about that, and then you'd overturn his decision because city attorneys don't get to decide things. They only get to recommend things. And once again, Ms. Seitz would have to recuse herself, you would think. And if she doesn't recuse herself, you have a locked council. And if they proceed ahead, then I guess your only alternative is go back to court to the judge and ask for a TRO, saying Ms. Seitz is not the mayor of Westminster,
which costs more money, right?
And more time. It is all this part of this strategy that impeded the recall election.
Right.
We should have had a recall election back in January.
Right.
And as soon as we can have it is June or July.
Right.
It was just to delay the clock, to run out the clock. And of course, because, well, the city is spending the people's tax money, they don't care. There's nothing to lose there. And
right.
It took some very courageous people in the Westminster Water Warriors to make this happen.
Right.
And it's going to take some very courageous people at city council to stand up and use some of the courage to basically oppose this, to me, obviously misusing the law, just like they did in the recall, where
right.
they found some grievous, horrible, possible fraud because we took off a cover sheet, which the judges laughed at.
Right.
And that was all imaginary in their minds. There was no evidence whatsoever of fraud or dishonesty or deceit or anything. She just made this fear come up out of her own and threw out 80 sections on this thing.
Well, and what would happen? Let's just say this all goes well because you guys are on a roll and you're doing well. So let's just say that Anita Sykes does not get to become mayor. There's going to be an election. I think you are one of the persons and somebody else from the Westminster Water Warriors are running to replace him. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so hopefully at the very first meeting that you guys, whichever one of you is there, gets elected, somebody can they put in some sort of resolution or proposal to drop the water rates back to where they were and stop this whole nonsense? I mean, how quickly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And that would be one of the first items of business. And we basically, we have to publish it and then have a first reading and then have a second reading and then it goes into effect 30 days after. But we could have lower water rates by the 1st of September.
Right.
And getting back to the thing that's going to happen Monday night, the 10th of May, the next regularly scheduled council meeting, mm-hmm. there's lots of things that the three councilors on our side could do. Just like really Chuck said, they could insist upon a vote and have Ms. Sykes recuse herself because she'd be the very beneficiary of this.
Right.
Okay, that's one thing they could do. If they couldn't do that, they could just be absent and there wouldn't be a quorum, so they couldn't do any business. And then, of course, the other people who attended, they could then, according to our city charter, compel our really police officers to go force the attendance of these other people. Okay, and I think that would make the TV.
I think that would be That'd be a visual. Well, and again, here's the thing. This all goes back to, this is not a controversial topic. The citizens of Westminster have made their wishes absolutely clear. This is a city council, a small group, but up until now a majority, that just wants to force their social engineering on us, and they don't care what anyone says or does. And rather than say, okay, we give up, I guess we'll be good city council members, they're saying, no. We're going to do everything we can. And what they hope, I think, Bruce, and we've seen him do this before, is they hope that sooner or later, you run out of money, you run out of time, you run out of, and like you said, it's a city attorney. This is their job. You know,
they exhaust us. That's always been one of their strategies, to run us out of time, run us out of money, and run us out of enthusiasm. And here's an example of one of the things that really Ms. Sykes is doing. Ms. Sykes is saying that, we were like 35 names short for her. And I really doubt that anyway. I think we had enough. But again, you have to go contest the city clerk's judgment. Oh, that's an illegible name. I can read it. Why can't you read it? Okay. But that's back to court. Okay. But anyway, she says that of these 6,100 people that asked for her to stand a recall election, well, demanded her stand a recall election, she says, well, that's less than 10% of the voters in the city. Well, I would point out in her election of 2019, where she got less than 12,000 votes, that's more than 50% of the votes she got.
Right.
That's a mandate.
Right.
That's something that she should be accountable for.
Exactly. But I mean, there was
they spin it the way that makes them look good. They're now, smart people.
Well, my guess would be, and Chuck, you comment on this too. I don't think Anita Sykes is calling the shots. They're fine. I mean, this is a strategy. She's got Emerge people and Emerge.
She's part of Emerge, isn't
right?
She?
Yes.
Well, it's really the Democratic Party of Adams County who's calling the shots. They're the ones who try to terrify the recall people. They're the yes. ones who are doing all the research to prevent.
Yes.
And so they're the ones that are calling the shots and doing the theorizing. They were also the ones who decided, okay, you go to the county commissioner thing and you come in here. You know, that really takes a countywide party to be able to do that. And the Adams County Democratic Party is a pretty vicious group, from what I can tell.
And a group worthy of great respect.
Yes.
They're a very dangerous group, and you should not underestimate that. I think it'd be good to go back what Julia talked about in 2018. In 2018, there were six people we didn't like on council, the mayor and five councilors, and one tremendously courageous person, David DeMott. And he had for 2 years fought this losing battle where they demeaned him and vilified him and what anyway. Well, in the November 2018 election, there was a councilor running for state representative, Miss Byrd. There was a councilman running for county commissioner, Miss Riley Pinter. They both won election in their respective races. So we know that they were going to be off council soon. Well, right then they were off council because they had been elected to higher office. You can't hold two elected positions on council. But they did not resign.
Right.
On the first part of December, a third member of council, Miss DeCambra, she got an appointment to Governor Paulus's office, and she took it. Well, don't we have three vacancies? Yeah. And doesn't our city charter say if you have three vacancies, you have to have a special election? Yes, it does. But Miss Byrd and Miss Pinter timed their resignations to get out of a 30-day window so that council could appoint three of their friends to take
right.
their spot.
Right.
And that is who this council is to this very day.
Right, right. And then what they did, too, when there was going to be an election or people who expressed interest, right? I remember because our friend Anil Mathai was going to run, and they may have it slightly wrong, but it was basically, literally, they called them up and said, okay, your interview is in 10 minutes, and if you can't be there, then you can't be considered. And he's like, what? And they're like, yeah, I mean, that's literally, and that's a city clerk's office, so you're right, they're just as crooked.
She's not biased,
Well, Bruce, you know, thank you, keep it, so what's the next step then is we have to see what happens at the next Monday meeting?
Exactly, Monday night, May the 10th, is the next major step. And it'll depend if the three good guys can overturn this sort of narrative to make Anita Sykes the mayor. That will be the next step. And that ball is firmly in their court. We're doing everything to support them and encourage them. But it's tough. Politics is tough.
Yeah.
What time is the meeting?
It is on Monday night, May the 10th. I think it starts at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
All right, Bruce.
And it is broadcast on a YouTube kind of broadcast.
Right. All right, Bruce. Hey, thank you for your time. Thank you for your fight. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Keep bringing us good news. The fight's not over, but so far. All right.
Good job, Bruce.
Bruce Baker there. Thank you, sir. Well, you know, again, the two stories that we're working on today sort of tie in together along with the Facebook banning Trump, right? They want to do anything and everything they can to fight against what the people want, to fight against average, everyday Americans, and they make it really hard if you try to fight back.
Yeah, well, it's I'm a little surprised the clerk didn't find some more signatures she could throw out, but
yeah. No, and this is from Dr. Donna, and I agree. You know, this ends when we all start standing up against the bullies. Time to stop allowing others to define the debate. I mean, as you point out here, then they become the incumbents and more difficult to unseat. That's why they do things the way they do. But I think it's interesting. Donald Trump, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm sure most of you guys know, he now has on his website, they've created a system. So he's sort of posting comments. He's sort of created, not his own Twitter, but you can share it. But I think the time is short before Twitter. So it's technically not Trump tweeting it, right? But I can go on there and I can retweet and post his post. And of course, then they'll take it down. I mean, I don't know how long. But his person also indicated, a spokesperson indicated, that they are continuing to work on their own social media program, or platform.
I think they want to get this out before Facebook said that Donald can't ever come back, just to take a proactive approach.
Right.
I don't think this is the end goal, but
no.
It's just an interim step to allow it to all happen. But, you know, people wonder, how's the Republican Party ever going to do well again in Colorado? Well, it's backing people like, you know, water warriors and others that don't want their water rates skyrocketed. They go against city councils like Westminster, and show they care about the average citizen.
Right.
That's how they do it. They don't do it by endlessly kind of going, we believe in limited government or something. You got to, well, and it's.
No, I know. I don't mean to laugh.
It is a sense of you have an overactive and spendthrift government, but it's the people of Westminster, and that's Westminster is no longer a small town. It's not a big town, but it's no longer a small town. The Republican Party cares about me and my situation,
right?
Not just the bond daddies and developers, elsewhere.
Well, and you know, we'll talk about this Friday with Patrick Neville, Representative Patrick Neville. One of the things that the Democrats, with the help of traitors like John Southers, a Republican out of Colorado Springs, and Kevin Priola, a fake Republican from Henderson, Colorado, are proposing a whole series of essentially they're calling it transportation fees, but it's going to increase the gasoline tax. If you're going to take an Uber ride, it's going to increase the tax there. It's increasing taxes essentially all across the board. It's going to become, not to mention the fact that gas prices are up like almost a dollar anymore. I mean, they're raising prices across the board, and they're hoping that no one pays attention, right? It's a little bit here, a little bit there, and all of a sudden, it's costing you bazillions of dollars to try to, you know, get to work anymore.
Well, so one thing that Republicans in general are united about, in general in Colorado, is that they believe in Tabor.
Right.
And one thing that beyond just Republicans, most Coloradans believe, they ought to be able to vote on tax raises.
Right.
And so last election, there was a way of funding everything pursuant to a tax raise, and the people rejected it.
Said no, just like the water rates, no.
So they go turn around and
raise it anyway.
Well, no, they didn't raise it anyway. Now they're saying it's fees.
Right.
And the one thing that Republicans across the state should go, no, that requires to go to the vote of the people. Now, Kevin Priola is maybe the Uber rhino, but John Southers, he doesn't deserve it, but still has some reputation. He's the mayor of Colorado Springs, former AG. And here he is putting his name, saying, oh, I think these fees are great. As a lawyer and everything else.
Well, and then the headlines all say, has bipartisan support.
Yeah, bipartisan
it does not
support.
Have bipartisan support. Hey, listen, we're out of time here.
We're out of time?
We're out of time, I know. The time goes so fast.
Oh, no, I got to cut the Chuck and Julie show. Oh, no, please.
I didn't even get to my cicada story, so we'll say that for Friday.
Oh, well, maybe we ought to go.
No.
Maybe we ought to go.
Hey, Patrick Neville will be with us Friday. You can get everything you need at chuckandjulie.com. You can catch the podcast there and links to whatever your favorite platform is. Thank you to Thomas and the great folks at BBS. Thank you to everyone on Zoom and everyone listening.
I'm Bruce Baker, and I just hope the Water Warriors keep up their warrioring.
All right, we'll see you.
Bye-bye, everybody.